When Jamie was scheduled to play, we didn't know she was going to bring Justin with her, but we're very grateful to both of you for that musical interlude. So what's the role of the minister? I looked it up. I found this in a book called Questions Non-Members Ask About Unitarian Universalism by John Sayas. And this is what John wrote. Like leaders in other religions, the minister is a teacher, guide, preacher, counselor, and visionary. The minister is expected to speak the truth as she or he comes to know it, and to share with the congregation with the understanding that members are to make up their own minds about the subject at hand. I just hate that definition. I was kind of hoping what I would find was Unitarian Universalism defines the role of the minister as a brilliant prescriber of corporate action who lays out a plan and the membership blindly follows with enthusiasm and zeal. And that's the point that I was at Wednesday morning when my telephone rang. And Frank Powell said, "It's not good. My grandson has killed himself." You've seen it in movies and TV shows. A character will be walking down a road or a city street, and suddenly a bomb will blow up or a gunshot will ring out. And everything changes. After an initial reaction of shock and grief, after groaning into my telephone, "Frank, I am so sorry," I noticed the poignant coincidence of writing a sermon about the role of the minister and suddenly being thrust into the role of the minister. And that thought was followed by the assurance that this congregation would respond in love and support for a family heartbroken on this train wreck of despair. And this congregation has responded in love and support for Frank and Jane and Allison and Henry, Hank's parents, and Leona, Hank's sister. On one level, you have done what any decent person would have done. On another level, you have demonstrated the best in congregational life. Although few of us may think these thoughts when we join a congregation, there is no question that there is a reality that looms in our awareness that says something like, "These people have my back." So part of why we hire a minister is to have some woman or man on our team who we can count on in times of trouble, heartache, disaster. And we expect that person to offer some leadership to the rest of us as members of that team. But another reason we hire ministers is to point out what is good about our caring hearts. What works to sustain our principles of inclusion and acceptance. And Jane Powell wants you to know that those principles of inclusion and acceptance mean that teens matter. I suspect we knew that, but she wants us to up the ante. She wants us to throw another log on the fire. She wants us to plant another row of flowers in that phrase. Teens matter. Most of us remember being a teenager. We remember that it was a tough transitional time from childhood dependence into the illusion of adult independence. I'm so glad y'all got that. Nobody's independent. It is a time of doubt, resentment, anger, fear, anxiety, you name it. I can remember at times hearing people say, these are the best days of your life. And my peers and I would sit and say, please, no. That can't be right. I have a number of friends who crow that any day they wake up and put their feet on the floor is a good day. But that is a learned philosophy. For teenagers, many days are hard slogs through peer judgment, unreasonable expectations coming from their families, teachers, and perhaps worst of all, from themselves. They need our encouragement, friendship, listening ears, and though it is sometimes terribly difficult, they need us to make eye contact. They need our encouragement, friendship, listening ears, and though it is sometimes terribly difficult, they need us to make eye contact. Eye contact is particularly difficult for me to mention this morning because Hank Ballard gave me great eye contact last Sunday. He was here with his mom, and they both looked very happy. He was wearing a beautiful lavender shirt, and he just looked like the nicest guy in the world. He even talked about coming back here and getting involved with our teen group within our religious education program. Knowing that, feeling that, it makes me just a little bit crazy, and it soaks me with a sadness I would not wish on my worst enemy. This has been a terribly difficult sermon to write, and you can tell it's not easy to deliver. But I hope you are hearing some encouragement in this disaster of a situation. I hope you are hearing what Jane and Frank and Allison and Henry and Leona wants you to hear. Encourage a teenager. Reach out to them even as they rush past you in the hallway during coffee hour. Say hello. And if you can slow them down enough, ask them about school. Ask them about projects outside of school. Ask them how they're doing. Say hello. And yes, the issue of sexual orientation and gender identity are key in this conversation. All I want to affirm in all of you is that our LGBTQ work here in this congregation is critical to who we are and means we are on the right side of issues that make such a difference in the lives of those who struggle. When Ann Hill was part of this congregation, she was well into her late 80s. And she said, you know, when you're 80-something years old, it doesn't really matter that you're a lesbian. People don't really mind. But she also sat about where John Henson is sitting this morning, and she watched two women marry each other in this congregation, and she said, I thought I would never live to see the day. Yes, it matters. So now we got to talk about drunk driving. Roughly 10,000 people are killed each year by what the Centers for Disease Control call an alcohol-impaired driver. They use the phrase alcohol-impaired driver because most people who are alcohol-impaired don't think they're drunk. But that's wrong. Absolutely wrong, wrong. The Center for Disease Control says that 28 people die every day in the United States at the hands of an alcohol-impaired driver. And many of those who die are children. I mention this today because I am talking about the role of the minister and because last Sunday I made a mistake. When I encourage you to encouraged you to sign your pledge card on next Sunday, this coming Sunday, I also encouraged you to have a designated driver. The problem is that I used a playful spirit, which prompted some of you to laugh. That was unfortunate. That was wrong. And I sincerely and humbly apologize. I love to make people laugh, but that was the wrong moment to be playful. As Jeff Knox so clearly pointed out last Sunday, designated drivers are not a laughing matter. Designated drivers are an important part of a culture that is truly looking to end drunk driving once and for all in this country. Let us all look forward to a day when there are no more drunk drivers. And let us all look forward to a day when there are no more teen suicides. But guess what? We have some hard-shelled realists in this room who are now thinking there will always be drunk drivers and there will always be teen suicides. So what do we do now? Well, there are a couple of options. We can feel guilty. I'm against that. Some people believe that guilt is a motivator to do better. I firmly believe it is not. I believe guilt is a substitute for doing better. I've driven many of my friends crazy over the years when they tell me they feel guilty about something or another. And I say, well, you know, you can do anything wrong in this culture as long as you're willing to feel guilty about it. They don't like that. But think about it just for a moment. How often have you used guilt instead of changing your ways? I need to lose some weight. It's a whole lot easier to feel guilty about it. Feeling guilty isn't really a good option. How about feeling good about the good that has been done? Not nearly as many people drive after drinking as once did. Mothers Against Drunk Driving have done a fantastic job of raising our awareness of the problem, and the deaths and the injuries from these kinds of accidents are lower today than they were 20 years ago. We're moving in the right direction, and we would do well to feel good about that. Teen suicide is being confronted by a number of organizations here in Greenville County and elsewhere across the country. Printed in your order of service is a link to a group that is accepting donations in memory of Hank Ballard. Please give a heart-sized gift to this organization. That's something you can feel good about. And finally, and Marshall, thank you so much for leading into this. I really appreciate your words. Finally, feel good about this congregation. Feel good about this place, what happens here, who you are as part of something larger than yourself. We are that caring, loving network of friends and neighbors that I described to the Reverend Carlton Smith last Sunday. We don't always hit the ball out of the park. But there have been plenty of reaches and touches just in the past few days as Dottie Beck and Cliff Beck Jr. and many others grieve the loss of Cliff Beck. And as so many have grieved with Frank and Jane and Allison and Henry and Leona and their families and friends over the loss of Hank. Love and caring have been extended. And love and caring have been extended to many sick folks, folks recovering from surgery. The list goes on and on. Two members of this congregation have gotten help with their dogs this week. It's good work. If your dog's in trouble, you need help. This, without question, has been the hardest piece of work I have done in my 18 years of ministry. Grief has been physically painful. Frank and I compared notes on how hard it has been to type without misspelling words, without transposing letters. You can imagine that it has been harder for Frank than it has been for me. Death is a hard taskmaster, and it was no easier to be with Dottie Beck's tears this week than it was to be with Hank's family's tears. The topic for today's sermon was set 2 months ago, so it was such a strange coincidence to be working with this sermon as news came of Hank's death. As the old carnival barker used to say, you pays your money, you takes your chances. I signed up for this. I graduated from college 41 years ago, so I have made a living in many different ways besides in the role of a minister. I have lifted and loaded 70-pound bags of rags, and I have moved thousands and thousands of bundles of newspaper. But this is the heaviest lifting I have ever done. Lucky for me, I have had all of you to help me lift. And from the very bottom of my heart, I thank you.